Thanks for listening to Matt McLaughlin History. Become a subscriber to receive exclusive bonus episodes, ad-free listening, early access to all episodes, and special member-only events. Click on the link in the show notes or visit patreon.com/mmhistory.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
A Living History production.
This is the Living History Podcast, broadcasting live across the airwaves.
Hello and thank you for joining me on Living History, a new year, a new season of the podcast, and I'm looking forward to a really exciting year of wonderful stories through history. And I hope you had an enjoyable break. I hope the new situation we find ourselves in with COVID at the start of 2021 isn't affecting you too badly. But obviously, my best wishes go out to everyone in these very challenging times. And hopefully, 2021 will see us start to come out the other side. But in the meantime, we've got each other, we've got history, we've got good podcasts, and that's what we're here to do. And so I wanted to kick off the year with something slightly different from walking the battlefields, from discussing chapters of history. We're going to talk about collecting militaria, which is something that a lot of people enjoy. It's quite a fascinating area of military history. And really, I wanted to have a discussion with a dear friend of mine and see if we can unpack this a little bit as to why people are so obsessed with finding relics from the war and items that soldiers used. And the person joining me is Pete Smith. Now, you will know Pete from our Battle Walks podcast. If you haven't listened to Battle Walks, go and check it out on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Play or wherever you find your podcasts. But Battle Walks is Pete and I walking the battlefields of Europe, and we've really been enjoying it over the last couple of months that we've been doing it. But Pete is also an avid collector. He lives on the battlefields, and he's joining me now to talk all about collecting militaria. Pete, welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. Nice to be here again. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, mate. I wanted to kick this off. It's a really interesting subject. Actually, let's kick off first with a bit of a warning, because when we talk about collecting here, we're talking about finding items that are associated with the war in a whole range of areas that we'll talk about. But the one thing I wanted to be very specific about at the start is the idea of collecting relics from the battlefield. And I know you and I share the same opinions about this, but that, you know, for many years, I did gather small items from the battlefield when I was going around, a cartridge case here or a shell fragment there. But in recent years, I've really formed a new opinion about it, which is, firstly, it's unsafe because there is a lot of unexploded ordnance on the battlefield. And secondly, the battlefield is a finite resource. There are hundreds of thousands of people who visit the battlefields all over the world every year. And if everyone takes something away fairly soon, there's not going to be anything left to tell the historic record. We don't want to get carried away. These aren't archaeological artifacts. They're just often little bits of scrap. But my position now is that we should not take things from the battlefield. Where do you stand on that?
I do pick up things, and especially personal things, because there is an issue, and that is that the plough will destroy them. If they're on the surface, they are going to be destroyed by the plough. The modern mechanical way of ploughing will eventually destroy everything. So it's not as if they're there and they are going to be there for forever. They won't be. They will eventually be broken into little pieces and totally destroyed. Now, again, some people may think that that's really the right thing. That's where they should be. I have to say, I don't agree. I quite enjoy picking up something. I get a buzz from picking up something and knowing that the last person possibly to touch that button was a soldier as he fastened his tunic. Let's hope he survived and the button just fell off his tunic. But I think it's important that they're there, especially when I ran a bed and breakfast. I don't any longer, but it was nice to have something in cabinets that people could look at and I could explain what it was. But I still just enjoy picking up little pieces that remind me of the soldier. So I don't touch munitions. I don't touch anything, almost anything war-y, really. It is those personal things, the bit of a toothbrush, the bit of a comb, the bit of a shaving mirror, that I tend to pick up, and it just gives me a connection. I suppose that's what it's about, really. It's getting a connection with the person that owned that.
I must agree with that, Pete, that the things that over the years I have found on battlefields that resonate the most with me and are still the most treasured parts of my collection are those personal items and things like, I remember collecting a coin from the Australian trenches at Bullecourt and a full piece of webbing equipment, leather webbing equipment on the battlefield of Pozieres and a boot at Bullecourt. And even in Guadalcanal in the Pacific Islands, picking up a shotgun cartridge, following in the footsteps of a soldier I knew had used a shotgun in a specific battle. So I do agree that personal items are quite moving parts of the whole story. Speaking of stories, why don't you tell us just about your experience with collecting? Because I know that you've been collecting, you know, for a very, very long time. Tell us how you started and what items you originally collected.
Yeah, it is a very, very long time because I was literally about between 6 and 10. I'm not sure exactly when, but I had parents who were very keen in history and on the tangible aspects of history. So we went to castles and forts, etc., from as long as I can remember. But you're either born with the collecting bug. I'm a big believer that you're born with the collecting gene, the collecting bug, or you're not. Because I've tried to make my children interested in collecting over the years, other family members interested in collecting, and nobody really is. Apart from I have one brother in Australia who actually lives in Australia, and he does collect, but the rest of the family did not, apart from my mum. And she was very keen that I should come with her to junk shops and auctions and find something very early that I was interested in. And it was something very unwary in a certain way, but yet very interesting, and that is and almost not really military. It's the postcard that the soldiers sent home, or in fact was sent to the soldiers. This is First World War. At the time when I was collecting, they were pence. They were literally pennies. And so you could go into a junk shop and buy a handful of postcards written from the trenches, photographs of the soldier, and it gave you a tangible link to those men. So very much as I've just been discussing about picking something up from the ground, it was picking something up from the junk shop that gave you that link. And from a very early age, I felt that link. I felt there was a connection to that soldier by looking at what he had written and also what was on the postcard. And very often they were comical postcards. A lot of comedy in the First World War, it's the other side of the coin to the horror and of what was going on. These postcards that gave a comical outlook. And so that's where I started, was collecting these postcards for pennies.
I tell you what, Pete, you tell that story and I lament the fact that I was not in the UK in the 60s, 70s and 80s when I just hear these unbelievable stories of people going into junk shops at a time when the First World War had really fallen out of favour. I think there was a bit of a hangover from the Second World War. I just don't think people were that interested in it anymore. And the stories of what people would find when they went into junk shops, photo albums full of photos that soldiers had taken, medal sets, equipment, personal items of soldiers that, you know, soldiers had fallen on hard times and sold or had passed away and their families had gotten rid of. Just the stories that people tell of being in the UK in the sort of 70s and 80s and the stuff you could find in junk shops. Did you find that experience?
Yeah, there was something else going on. I'm from the city of Hull, or just from the outskirts of Hull, so I used to go into Hull to the junk shops, and a little motorbike used to whistle around. That was my Saturday morning, really, was everybody else went to football, I went to the junk shops. And I just spent the day whistling around on my motorbike from shop to shop. Because something else was happening in Hull, and that was they were demolishing the terrace roads. The old houses, back to backs, they were being pulled down and cleared for a modern housing. And of course, as they pulled these down in the attics, they found all of these souvenirs that had been put there 70 years before. And just extraordinary what was being found. And of course, what most of the people did, the demolition guys, the people clearing the houses, they just took them to the nearest junk shop, nearest antique shop, and said, what will you give us for these? And they gave them a couple of quid, and that's where they were sold on. And so you're absolutely right that the stuff that was turning up was just extraordinary. So it was exactly the perfect time to collect. The one thing I regret terribly is that I didn't ever get the connection with the men themselves. And of course, at this time in the mid 70s, the men were still alive in great numbers. And I didn't ever bother to kind of go around and find out where these guys lived. It was something that I've always regretted. I remember my father going into work, into his office, and there would still be First World War veterans at the end of their working careers, working where my dad worked. And I asked him if anybody had any cap badges. I just fancied, I was about 11, I fancied collecting cap badges. And my dad came in with armfuls of cap badges that evening that had been given over during the week to him to bring home. And some of them were the men themselves. They'd actually given them their personal cap badges, and no thought even crossed my mind. Perhaps it would be interesting to know what this guy had done. So I regret that terribly, that I didn't get that connection, which other historians and friends did, and they went and visited and recorded the veterans. Of course, Peter Hart doing it professionally with his job at the Imperial War Museum. So thankfully, lots of people did it, but I was sad that I didn't and regret not doing it.
I think I was a little bit the same, Pete, and maybe it's just when you're young and you have a different perspective on things. I know that people like Richard Van Emden, the great historian, spent a lot of his teen years and early 20s out talking to First World War veterans, but I think that's highly unusual. I remember hearing on the news that the last Gallipoli man, the last man who landed on the first day at Gallipoli, had passed away, and he lived about two suburbs away from where I lived. This was in 1997, and he passed away, Ted Matthews. And for years, I'd been living literally only streets away from him, and the thought had never crossed my mind to go and track down and see if there's anyone around. So I think that's it's probably the fascinating aspect of what we're discussing here, Pete, is that we want to make these connections with these men, and yet when we had the opportunities to do it, we perhaps didn't. It's not an easy thing to do. It's easier said than done to say I'm going to go out and forge relationships with war veterans. It's a difficult thing to do. But isn't it a fascinating thing that we still want to feel these connections, but just in a different way to actually going and speaking to these soldiers?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just explain something that this is very recent. There was a little bit of archaeological work being done on the salient in Ypres, and very close to Ypres. And it was destructive archaeology because they were going to put a gas pipeline through the area, so it didn't matter what they did. So they were deconstructing a trench, effectively, and they went straight down and through the duckboarding floor. And I took a few duck boards home because they were going to do nothing with them. They were going to be burnt. They were going to be destroyed. Just to feel that the soldiers had walked on those pieces of timber, and they're polished up now, just to or protected, not overly polished, I suppose. I'm not that keen, but they're protected. And just like picking them up and knowing that the boots of the First World War veterans, the soldiers, well, they were not veterans, the soldiers walked on these duck boards.
Fascinating stuff, mate. I mean, tell us over the years what sort of items you've collected and what they mean to you when you have them in your possession.
Well, I've been the full gambit, really, I suppose. I started off with postcards. I then went to something, some people may know what this is, crested china. Crested china is a white porcelain china that was very popular before, during, and just after the First World War. It has the crest of a town or a badge on it, sometimes a military badge. And you can get jugs and little... all sorts. But in the First World War, they turned their hand, again, odd really, but they turned their hand to doing souvenirs related to the war. So you could buy shells and tanks and guns and all sorts of little ornaments that were vehicles or things associated with the war. So very, very strange, but I collected those. And occasionally I go off tangent. I collected bottles only because, again, in my early teens, I discovered where the old rubbish dump very close to the village I lived in had been, the Victorian rubbish dump. And so with shovel in hand, I went and dug in the rubbish dump and found all of these bottles. So I go off tangent occasionally. As a collector, you do that. And then I became interested in bayonets. So I collected bayonets from the First World War, from all nationalities. And then on we go, uniforms, and then I started to get this interest. As I got into my late teens, I started to get more of an interest in the people, and so sadly almost too late, but I started looking at the name that was inside that piece of uniform, that piece of equipment, and slowly my collecting went to really things that I knew I could research that had a provenance. And you have to remember, in the late 70s, early 80s, research was still very difficult. No computers, or very few computers, no internet. So everything was manual. It was going down to the library. It was telephoning other people. I spent a lot of time on the phone talking to other collectors and other people interested in memorabilia. And slowly you learn. And that's really the key, because I didn't just stick to one thing. I didn't collect postcards or photographs all of my life. I collected anything that I found was interesting.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It meant that my knowledge base grew and grew. And the other thing I became interested in, museums. I've always become a volunteer at museums because it gives you that opportunity to handle things that you will never or very rarely handle in real life. And there's nothing better than being able to tell whether something's a fake or not. Having said that, at this period, very little was faked to do with the First World War because it wasn't overly collected. The Second World War, especially Nazi German stuff, that I've never been really able to understand why people collect that. Well, I can. As a collector, I do know why they collect it, but it didn't interest me. It's always been just very specifically the First World War and British First World War. I'm not brilliant at German stuff, but British First World War memorabilia, that's my thing. And I have to say, as I began to travel more, I joined the Royal Marines, so I spent a lot of time travelling. It meant that I had to collect something that I could was portable. And so the postcards and documents, I became very interested in letters and photographs, not just postcards, photographs and any kind of documentation under the general term of ephemera. Or ephemera. I've never quite known, obviously. I think ephemera is correct. And that's paperwork that would normally be thrown away. So the railway ticket for a soldier coming home on leave, things like that really fascinated me.
Are you still collecting these days, Pete, or is that something that belonged to your youth?
You can see, because we're Skyping, but you can see that I collect books. I'm very interested in books, so I still collect books on the Great War. And ephemera and photographs, I still, because it is small still, and it's still relatively cheap. All of those things are cheap. Equipment, uniforms, very expensive nowadays. Also, the other issue I have is I don't live in England or Britain, so I no longer have access to those things from the attics that do occasionally turn up. So I, generally speaking, I buy online now, the odd little book, the odd bit of ephemera that I've not seen before, something unusual, a photograph that I've not got. I've got about 4,000 photographs, postcard photographs of the Great War, and trunks full of documents and letters and things. So I feel like I'm only a custodian of these things, I have to say. I'm one of those people, I'm quite happy to pass on the information that I have and sometimes even pass on the artifact itself. I don't always feel that it's necessary for me to own it. And I felt very often in my life as I collected that I was really an archaeologist recovering things before they ended up in the ground. Because very often a lot of the things I managed to get hold of were on their way to either the fire or the dump, literally, because I was very friendly with some people that worked in the old the rubbish industry, in the recycling, as we now know it. And so they would keep things for me that they thought I might be interested on, and I would pay a few pounds to get them from them. So I was getting things in some cases just before they were due to be disposed of. And so I've always felt that it was important to save these things, and also that knowledge that once I've saved them, then they're not going to be lost, because when I no longer want them or I've gone, they will go to somebody else who will hopefully revere them or look after them and feel that connection that I did.
What are the highlights of the things you've collected over the years?
Now, that's a very... And I knew this question was coming, and it's always very difficult for me to answer. I suppose it's the unusual now, and it's changed my outlook on what I really enjoy looking at. It's the unusual. So I have a whole series of letters that were written by a conscientious objector, and they're fascinating. I have a series of letters written by a padre, again, during the First World War. Very, very interesting. So those first-hand accounts I find fascinating. But it's also other things that you find occasionally. This is a rather horrific story, but it just shows you what is still out there, and you just have to have an element of luck and keep looking. I found a little pocket Bible to a soldier, and it wasn't until I looked carefully, probably only 2 or 3 weeks after I'd bought it, that I realised there were tiny holes going right the way through it. And it suddenly dawned on me, what on earth would make tiny holes through a pocket soldier's pocket Bible? And of course, it's shrapnel. And I realised that this thing had been in his pocket, and And what I thought was dirt soaked through all the pages was in fact his blood. And so a horrible realization of what I had. And then to look more carefully through each page and turn each page to discover his story, because he'd written his story into the Bible. The fact that he joined up as an 18-year-old in 1918, captured eventually, having been wounded, had a limb amputated, I don't know which, he doesn't state, and then returned to England as in a prisoner exchange that took place. So his whole story was in there, just in the back. The only thing he didn't do was write his name, so I still don't know who he was. But everything else was in there. I know where he came from, what church he went to, because in fact he was given by the minister of the church, gave it to him before he left for the war. So it's those personal things that I really find the most interesting. But there are oddities. One of the other things that I found on the battlefield many years ago was a live bullet. And again, we've just been discussing Dunt. I wouldn't recommend that you pick them up, but I live here and I've lived here for nearly 20 years. So just picking up a bullet and just having a quick look at it. And this bullet had been struck on the back. So in other words, it had been in a rifle, the soldier had pulled the trigger and the bullet hadn't gone off. And to find that bullet in the ground with no rust stains on it, which means that he managed to eject it from the weapon, you realise that this bullet tells a whole story, and it is a story of horror, really, in one way or another. Did he manage to get another round into his rifle and shoot at again at whatever he was shooting at? Did the soldier he was going to shoot at duck out of the way and was not killed and so survives and goes on and has a family? Did this guy survive? So we'll never know, but just that one bullet with that pin mark in the back to show it had been struck but hadn't gone off, it just really made turn me cold when I had it in my hand, and it was something that I felt I needed to keep. So it's on my, in fact, it's just behind me here. It's on my bookshelf here.
Pete, this is why, you know, you talk about having the collecting gene and not having the collecting gene, but I think even just the way you told that emotive story and the connection you can find with those items, that's why it's important that people preserve them, because most people wouldn't be like that. Most people pick up a bullet and go, oh, you know, even if they recognized what it was, a misfire, they wouldn't care. So the fact that you formed that association, I think that's what, you know, that's why people like you are doing such a great job of keeping the history alive. So I think it's absolutely wonderful. In fact, I'm going to get a little bit philosophical here. I'm going to ask the question, why do we collect? Why is it important? You know, not why is it important, what drives us? What are the emotions behind it? What is this desire to connect with the history in through these tangible objects?
Well, lots of people are interested in history, and I have to say I know lots of academic and historians who are not really interested in collecting, and that's fine. I understand that as well, and they just love reading the stories, reading the books, and knowing what went on. And really, they do collect in a way; they're collecting the knowledge. But I feel it's nice to have something tangible, and I feel that certainly there is a certain type of person, and I must be one of them, that needs that actual physical artifact to help you then get that connection. It helps you to feel that you know a little bit more about that person by having something that belonged to them or something that came from that battlefield. So it's a tangible. Yes, you can go and look in the museum, and you can do the same by looking at things in the museum. But to own a piece yourself. And I'm surrounded by all sorts here on my desk. I've got fossils going right the way back to millions of years ago. I've got a piece of medieval pottery right in front of me with the potter's thumbprints in the clay. Now, to me, that's one of the best things I've got. I found it in the field around here. Nothing to do with the First World War. It's to do with it's almost going back to the Dark Ages, as we used to call them, very early medieval France. And here's the man's thumbprint, where we can see his nail in the clay. And it's that connection that I just love, knowing a little bit more than knowing what he was doing and who he was. But there's his thumbprint in that clay. So it's. It's something that I think as a human race, it's something we need to do, to have that connection to our past, to know a little bit more, to be able to hold a photograph of a relative. Well, I hold photographs of lots of relatives. It's just odd that none of them are my relative. But at least I'm holding that photograph. I'm keeping their memory alive a little bit longer by having that photograph and caring for it, and then hopefully passing it on to somebody else in the future. So it's that tangible connection. I think it's important that we have that as a human race, to have more than just the knowledge, to have those tangible artifacts that take us back to earlier days.
What do you think is going to happen in the future of collecting? Because rare items and sort of prestigious items to do with the First and Second World Wars are now very, very expensive. What do you think the future of collecting is going to be?
I think it changes. I mean, I think people collect different things. So if you're a collector, you will change your collecting theme. So just as a matter of interest, it's a by the by. But I obviously here, I can't get the things that I would really like to collect, those First World War pieces of memorabilia to the British Army. I've started collecting 1960s China. So heaven knows why. I just like it. It's cheap. It's very visual. And it doesn't take up that much of a space. So I've moved on to something else, but I still keep my eye out for those older artifacts. And I think that's one of the important things. You move on to something else. If you're collecting history and you want to keep those artifacts alive and carry them on into the future without them being destroyed, then it's important. So yes, I can't get that much First World War memorabilia, but let's hope that things turn up still. And I know from collecting friends, they're always ringing me up or emailing me and say, Pete, you'll never believe what I found in the market yesterday. So things do still turn up. It's just that they don't turn up quite as often as they did in the 1970s and 80s.
And Pete, if someone's listening to this, and we have a lot of young listeners and people who perhaps aren't as experienced in the world of military history as we are, and they are excited by this and they want to start a little collection themselves, what advice would you give to people who are just starting out in this field?
Knowledge is everything. Don't collect anything that's really expensive, because until you become knowledgeable, there's a lot of people nowadays who sell fakes and replicas and reproductions. So start with something. Postcards being still not particularly expensive, a lot more expensive, £3 or £4 now you'll pay for an interesting postcard, and a lot more if it gets very interesting. My older boy, who's now in his 30s, has suddenly become interested in postcards himself. And so he's interested in postcards of the Royal Marines in the First World War. So I've just been buying him the odd one and feeding it to him. I'm hoping to encourage him to get that collecting gene, because he's probably going to inherit quite a bit of my collection. So I really need him to be interested. But I would recommend start with something that is researchable. You can get the books out on it, so you know what you're looking at. Go to museums. That's the other thing I would always say. Go to museums, go and do a little bit of research. But when you find that thing that you're interested in, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a coin, a stamp, a postcard, a photograph, a letter, just think about the person that once licked the back of that stamp and stuck it on that postcard and took it down to the post. What was he like? What was he doing, and why was he doing it? And I think it takes you into history. It brings history alive. So it doesn't really matter what you collect, but start with something that's not too expensive. So if you don't get it right all the time, then you're not losing too much money.
Excellent advice, Pete. And I think it's a really fascinating area. It's not for everyone, I should say. There's going to be a lot of people listening to this who are scratching their heads and wondering why the hell we bother. It's not for everyone. And to be honest, I don't collect much stuff anymore. When I was younger, I had an obsession with holding the objects from the war. And now I really content myself with just walking the ground and taking photos and reading books. But it is something quite remarkable to feel that connection with a soldier. As you say, those items that a soldier personally held, you know, the duck boards you talked about that they walked across on the battlefield, the postcards that they sent. For those of us who get it, it's a wonderful connection with history. So, Pete, it's been really lovely. Thank you for just coming on and sharing your thoughts. And if people are listening to this and want to get out and collect, then go and do it. I think it's a really rewarding aspect. And particularly given the internet these days, we do have access to more items than we ever have before through the eBay and other sites like that. So, Pete, just thank you so much for joining us and sharing your experiences in this field.
Pleasure, Matt. It's been good fun.
And don't forget as well, if you want to hear more from Pete and I, tune into Battle Walks, our other podcast, available wherever good podcasts are found, as we walk the great battlefields of Europe. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you again on Living History. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review for the podcast, and visit livinghistorytv.com for more great history content.